Welcome to Killer Women with your host, best-selling author, Danielle Girard. And now, Danielle's next killer woman.
Hello, and welcome to Killer Women Podcast, a proud member of the Authors on the Air global network with more than 4 million listeners. I am your host, suspense author Danielle Girard, and my guest today is Laura McHugh. Laura is the award-winning, internationally best-selling author of The Weight of Blood, Arrowwood, The Wolf Wants In, What's Done in Darkness, and the forthcoming Safe and Sound, which Heather Gudenkauf called beautifully written, unflinchingly told, and relentlessly suspenseful, which I agree fully. The Weight of Blood won the International Thriller Writers Award and the Silver Falchion Award for the Best First Novel and the Missouri Author Award for Fiction. Her most recent release, What's Done in Darkness, won the Missouri Literary Award, was named a Best Book of the Summer by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and Self Magazine, and was Harlan Coben's pick for Best Summer Thriller on the Today Show. McHugh lives in Columbia, Missouri with her daughters. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and get to chat with you.
I know, it's so exciting. And we met, was it about VoucherCon? I feel like we were sitting at a dark table. Oh, Minneapolis.
Probably, I don't know.
They all kind of start to run together. Okay, well, there's so much fun stuff. And I have a quote I love. I already read a quote. If you missed the quote I read on my Instagram, go back and listen. It's on Facebook too, because Laura's writing is so beautiful. And she paints the picture of this town so fabulously. Before I gush, Laura, tell us a little bit about Safe and Sound.
Yes, like most of my books, it's set in a creepy small town in the Midwest. This one's in rural Missouri, and there's a meatpacking plant at the center of the town, and it's just kind of this dead-end town that people do not leave. You live your whole life there, and you die there, and you're buried there. So the book is about these two sisters. Their older cousin was going to be the first in their family to go to college. She was on the verge of getting out of this town, and she was babysitting them and banished from their farmhouse overnight, leaving some blood behind. And so it's, you know, the girls are a little older now and they're trying to find a way out of town themselves. And some human remains are found and they're just trying to figure out finally what happened to their cousin.
It is as Heather said, you are a really beautiful writer. I'm embarrassed that this is my first Laura McHugh book, but it will not be my last. And God, your accolades. Clearly, this is not your first fabulous book. I'm going to read a little quote from the very beginning because it totally captures the way this town is, which I love. This is about the girl's Aunt Elsie, who is Grace's mom, and she holds a vigil every year for Grace. Aunt Elsie held the vigil every year, and every year she said we'd bring Grace home. But the ironic part was that what Grace had wanted most was to get away from here. She was always telling me and Kylie that we had to get out before we got stuck, that there was no life for us in Beaumont. There was no choice but to leave and not look back. Otherwise, we'd be married and pregnant and working at the meatpacking plant before we were old enough to buy beer. We didn't really get it back then. We were only 10, 11 years old when she disappeared, but I did now. Cutting roads circled around town, from the hospital to the meatpacking plant to the graveyard. And that was life in Beaumont from start to finish. You were born at Beaumont Hospital, or Beaumont General, worked at Savor Meats, and then ended up in Beaumont Memorial Cemetery. It was like the kiddie car ride at the county fair, where you've got your own steering wheel and you can turn it all you want, but there's only one way to go, the track laid out before you got there. So wonderful. And and like you said, these small, creepy towns, and you're in Missouri. So, of course, we want to extrapolate that you're in some small, creepy town. I'm sure you're not. But so what is it about play? Like, you know, you clearly writing about place is a very important thing. The Beaumont is fully its own character and beautifully drawn. So what makes that feel, you know, important and real for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest and the Ozarks, and I moved down to a very isolated part of rural Missouri, Ozark County, down by the Arkansas border when I was young. And it was kind of like a big culture shock. There were no other people around, you know, we were out in the wilderness and it was a little bit scary, a little bit intimidating to me, but it's like a beautiful, rugged area. And so I always just found it interesting, you know, the landscape, like it's gorgeous but remote, so it's kind of intimidating. And just that small town feel, you're kind of isolated, but it's like you're in this boiling pot, you know, with these other people. You're all like really kind of interconnected in a lot of different ways, both good and bad, when you're in a small town. Certain crimes that can happen in a small town, I mean, it really touches so many people and radiates out because everyone knows each other, or they're related to each other, or, you know, whatever. So for me, just kind of that setting and that environment has always been like really fertile ground for crime stories, and just kind of that tense feeling like you're kind of stuck here in this remote kind of scary place.
And of course, we want to imagine, I think, in these small towns that the crimes come from outside. It's like In Cold Blood, right? Two guys come in to this, you know, peaceful town, this, and they're the bad guys. And then, you know, they don't come from there. And yet the reality is, right? I mean, there are crimes that happen from outside, people driving through or whatever. But a lot of the times, you know, arguably most of the time, the crimes happen from within. And so then not only in a small town, this like boiling pot, like you said, but you're in there with a bunch of people who have very, very dark secrets. And there are some very, very dark secrets in this book, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is another thing you love. You clearly love dark secrets. So now when you developed, when this story came to you, you know, how did it come together? Was it Grace, you know, missing that emerged, or was it, you know, this Kylie and Amelia wanting to get out? Sort of, how do your stories kind of come together?
Yes. Usually how my novels come together, I'll start with, I'm often inspired by true crimes and often like crimes that have happened here in the Midwest, in the small towns where I've lived. There are just so many creepy crimes here, and these, you know, it's true, and it's kind of scary. But with this one, it wasn't a crime that took place here, but I had remembered reading about this crime where a babysitter was horribly murdered in this house, and the parents come home and there's this brutal murder scene, and they had their two daughters were there, and they assume, you know, they're dead or whatever, they don't know, they can't go in the house. And then the two sisters are found like in their room, and they were fine, they were asleep. And so this horrible, brutal crime had happened, you know, right there. And somehow they were untouched. And so I was kind of fascinated with that scenario. And I'm thinking, like, you know, how would they feel, especially as they get older, and knowing like this had happened right there, they were spared somehow, but also, you know, horribly traumatized. And how would that affect you? And so that was a little seed for it that kind of started out. And then, I mean, I'm always writing about these small towns, and it's always like either the desire to escape or something that's pulling you back. Like you've gotten out and it's pulling you back in. And just because, you know, having lived in these small towns, obviously I don't live anymore in the small towns where I'm from, but a lot of people stay, and people are always like, oh, you should move out of there. It's a dead end town. There's no jobs. It's full of crime. Like you should leave, but it's way harder than that.
Yeah.
Like if you've known nothing else and you have no connections outside of that community, it is really hard for people to actually change their lives and leave. It's a lot harder than people think.
Yeah. And you see the struggles. I mean, you know, you see the struggles. Absolutely. We talked about this a tiny bit before we got on, before we started recording, about how it seems a little harder for the women to get out. There's this idea that, and maybe that's sort of our familial, and this is a gross generalization. I like to make gross generalizations about women because that's what I want to focus on, the women. But I do notice, like, you know, for instance, you know, Amelia, who is the older sister, will not leave without Kylie, right? She wants her sister to go. And Grace was sort of their cousin as well as their babysitter. So this role model for them. And then of course, you know, Grace disappears. So they believe very strongly that she never got out, right? Because if she'd gotten out, she would have reached out to them at some point. So, and it feels hard to leave that town without knowing what happened to her. And of course, like, you know, it's education, it's opportunity, it's money. I mean, money is a huge, these women are working at, you know, they're working at the Waffle House. Is it, what is it? It's not the Waffle House.
The Waffle House. Yeah.
It's the Waffle House.
And
they're just trying to scrape together enough. And then of course things happen, like their mom's behind on rent. And, you know, it does seem so much more difficult than then. And I thought it was interesting that the two characters who we know are going to get out of that town, one who's already gone, who was a friend of Grace's, and in Grace's year, he's, you know, going to medical school. And the other, and the other one is, you know, is a friend of Amelia's who's going into the army. And that's almost it, right? For the whole story, right. This whole town, those are the two people that we see leave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does it seem like it's a bigger, I mean, in real life or in fiction, do we feel like it's a bigger struggle for the women and why?
Yeah, and it can be. And I think like the small towns that I lived in, it was like, if you were going to get out of there, the ways to do it, like my family was really poor, you know, I didn't have anything going for me, except like I was good at school. And so to go to college, like that was one way, or join the military. And so like all my brothers and sisters, it was either you're going to figure out you're going to go to college, or you're going to join the military, because that's the only way you're going to do anything, you know, with your life, to do anything different. You have to make that change. And so, yeah, in this case, you know, it was the guy that ends up going to college. You know, everybody in school was always encouraging him on, oh, he's going to be a doctor, he's going to do this and that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's on the football team, he's going to succeed. Oh, we want him to do all this. And whereas Grace, the girl, they're more like, stop trying to get in the way of him and all his grand things he's going to do, like right. kind of back off. And that comes from real life. I had a teacher in high school who was like that, and it drove me crazy.
Sure.
And it was just like, I just felt like constantly having to fight to prove like I'm as good or better, you know, as any of you. And I'm going to get out, I'm going to do these things, you know? So I did notice that a little bit. Of course, that was many years ago when I was in school, and I hope things have changed for women
yes.
somewhat. But at the time when I was in school, it was very much like that. It's like, yes. he's going to be the star. Like, stop trying to get a better grade than him and come out mm-hmm. on top. Like, just you sit in the back of the room and, mm-hmm. you know, let us do our man thing up here. And very frustrating.
And there is, of course, and there is the sense, I think, that, you know, families depend on, I mean, and again, we do speak in generalizations. There are very many wonderful examples of this not being the case. But there are situations where, right. you know, women are considered the ones who will take care of their parents. So they should yep. not leave, right? They're needed mm-hmm. in town.
Yeah, exactly.
And we see that, I think, with, you know, with Amelia and Kylie's mom, right? They're, and she's not the one saying to them, you can get out, you can do this, right? And neither right. really was Grace's mom. They were saying, you know, you're probably going to end up like me, you know, and yeah. it really does take them, you know, digging in and being like, we mm-hmm. can do this. And I think, you know, Amelia feels like she's clinging to her younger sister, like, we're going to do this together. Because of course, it feels yeah. much less scary to imagine doing that with somebody. And it is like, this is, I mean, either one of those options for somebody who grew up in a small town with, you know, a provincial outlook on things and not a lot of yeah. real life big experiences, college and the military would seem hugely intimidating, right?
Oh yeah. And there's also like this prevalent thing where it's like, oh, you think you're better than us?
Yeah.
You think you need to get out of here? You think this isn't good enough? You think our life yeah. isn't good enough and you're better and you need something better? There's a little bit of that attitude at times. And in this story, for sure, their family yeah. is like, you know, you should be here helping
yeah.
us out. And why do you think that you deserve to have, you know, you're going to do something better and like, we're not good enough.
Yeah. Don't get too big for your britches kind of thing.
Yes.
And so I yeah. think that's the what we see is that the men get to speak more openly about their ambitions and their goals, and the women,
right.
you know, and Grace too had to really keep that kind of quiet so that people didn't get in her way even more. Right.
Yeah.
Cause that was yep. the impression was that the more she sort of talked about her goals, the more people wanted to really squash them. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
And and then there's this sense of like, you know, families come live together. So, you know, an uncle moves in so there's all these layers of, you know, adults around who sometimes are safe and sometimes, you know, and helpful and sometimes are a little bit sketchy or, you know, give us a different impression. And so as these girls are growing up, it's like, who do we believe, you know, who do we believe?
Right.
And I think that's true. As well for kids, you know, who maybe don't have a two family, you know, two parent household, and there are other adults that have different perspectives, adults who aren't parents, who aren't, Yeah, it's really interesting. So tell us about your process, because now it sounds like you're working full time. We are seeing Laura in her day office with some beautiful art that I'm assuming was maybe done by one.
I
Who
didn't
is
make
that?
that. No,
You
but
did.
one of my coworkers on a team building thing painted this,
I love
and
that.
it
It's great.
was,
It's
it's
very
so
bright and
cute.
cheery. Yeah, it
It is.
totally
I know,
is.
it's happy. It makes me smile.
Yeah, which is
Yeah,
important. And you've
for
got
sure it is.
two young girls, so.
Well, they're in high school now. So one
Okay,
of them
so
is a
not.
high school senior and one's a freshman.
You're
So
getting
yeah,
there.
getting there, getting really close.
Yeah.
But yeah, like my writing process, I mean, and it's changed from book to book. This is, I'm writing, I guess, my sixth book right now. So yeah, like when my kids were little, that's when I wrote my first book when I had a newborn and a toddler and started writing. And so I would write, like in the middle of the night when everyone was asleep and
Yeah.
just whatever spare moment I could grab. And I was definitely a pantser and I didn't know what I was doing. And I was just like, my first book didn't, was halfway through before I knew where the book was going. And but now, like I just, gosh, 6 months ago, I started a job. I'm writing, like I'm doing technical writing during the day now. So it's kind of interesting because now I have to figure out when am I fitting in all of my
Other
fiction writing.
stuff.
So it's like
Yeah.
at lunch or at night, after work, weekends. So it does kind of feel like I have two jobs, but
Well,
or maybe three
three.
because
I
my
was gonna
kids are
say,
like
yeah.
a third job for sure.
They really, I'm sorry to
But
say that mine are
yeah.
out of the house and they're still like a third job. I love them, but
Really?
they never really, yeah, sorry. It's less of a, it's a smaller third job. It's more part-time,
Well, and I feel
but.
like when the youngest is about to turn 15, but when she's 16 and then able to
Yes.
drive, that'll be
It
different. She works at Dairy Queen
does.
now, so I drive her to work. I pick her up.
Yes. Yes. But
Yeah,
then you can
so
get a
a lot of
chocolate
writing.
blizzard, a chocolate
Right.
extreme.
I get
I
the
know
ice cream
exactly.
cakes. They're so good.
Yeah, I know exactly what I would get
Yeah.
as I picked up my daughter from Dairy Queen, if that's where she worked. But no, right. You're the chauffeur as well as sort of all the other things. And
Yes. Yeah.
that's a lot. That's a lot. So when you said you, so when you finished, got halfway through your first book, which I think everybody's first book is sort of a hot mess experience, right? You don't know what you're
Yeah.
doing. You've never done it before. Did you then get through halfway and say, oh God, I don't like, did you, how did you handle that at that point? What did you do?
Yeah, so I was halfway through. I didn't realize the problem was I didn't realize what the crime had been. Like I knew someone was missing and I knew someone was dead and I didn't know what had happened to them. And about halfway through, I realized I figured it out. I figured out the answers because there was a real crime that had happened down in the area where I'd gone to high school, and there was something about that that clicked with me, and I was like, oh my gosh, this all makes sense, and I know what happened to both of these women. And then I was very quickly like writing the rest of the story. But in The Weight of Blood, there are two different timelines and there are multiple narrators. It's different people in this town, like in both timelines, the same people in this town, both timelines, but there's like a mother and daughter narrator in the two timelines. And so multiple timelines, multiple narrators, all of this stuff, and my very first book. And so I was like, what was I thinking? Like, why did I think this was gonna, what was I doing? I don't know. I thought I was telling the story. I thought it was the best way to tell the story, but it's pretty complicated. And so I was like printing out everything, and I had each chapter with like a note card on it, and it was like, who's the narrator, which timeline, which important things happen in this section, and I had to weave together all the different pieces. So I had it printed out and then putting it together kind of like a puzzle. And weirdly, I mean, I feel like it's a miracle that I did. I don't know how I did that. I had like no sleep. I had little babies and I don't know. And somehow I figured that out. And it was like when the book actually sold, I mean, it was like, I was like in shock. Like this is, I had no idea how things would go. Because things went really well for that first book.
I
And
was gonna say, not only
I
did it
was very
sell it,
lucky.
yeah.
Yeah, it went well. So that was like crazy and scary and lucky and all of that. And then I had one of the contracts, one of my foreign contracts was like for two books. And so I knew I had to write a second book. And then I sold it, my second book here in the US, before I had written it and all this. So then it was like, okay, now I have deadlines. Now I'm actually,
Yeah.
people are waiting on this. And that's different a
Yes,
little bit for your
yes.
writing when you have that. And so just trying to feel like, how can I make this process better? Because I can't just wander around like writing half
Right,
a
because
book
it
not knowing what's going to
exactly.
happen.
it takes much longer. You don't feel like you have that freedom. So yeah. So how did your process change?
Yeah. Well, so I thought, okay, I'm going to outline. I'll just be an outliner now. That's what I'm going to do. And so I made an outline. Oh, it was horrible. Yeah. Like it took all the joy out of it. And I just felt like I was trying to write from point A to point B, and it didn't work for me. So I threw that out, started over. And so at this stage, what I do a much looser sort of outline. Like I want to know where I'm going, and I have an idea, where will these characters end up? Like, what is their journey? What was the point of this whole thing? What is the crime? You know, who did it? And just have kind of this loose structure, which helps me. And it can still change while I'm writing. Sometimes it just does, but it helps me just to kind of know where I'm going. So I have to think that through a little bit more upfront.
Yeah. Now. Which is smart. I mean, I'm like 16 books in. I still get like halfway through a book and I'm like, oh, damn it. I made a wrong turn like at 20,000 words and I have to go back. I mean, it is interesting. Like, I think I'm obviously a pantser too. Otherwise, I wouldn't have that problem. But I do think there's something really true about what you say about outlining. And people do it and they swear by it and they're great at it and they produce beautiful books. But for me, and also, it's like part of the joy of the book is finding out what it's about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, I would love to be an outliner, but I really can't do it. So let's talk about mothers and daughters. You brought that up, but I think that is also, and it sounds like from your books, this is like a thing for you. And obviously you are a mother with two daughters and also a daughter with a mother. Mm-hmm. So what is interesting about exploring that? Because obviously it's such a powerful, complicated bond.
Yes. And a lot of the mothers that I write are complicated people who are maybe not the best mothers, you know? And it's funny because my mom, she's like, whenever I'm going to an event or something, she's like, you have to tell those people the mother is not based on me. Like, you have to tell them it's not me. None of those mothers are me. It's so funny. Like,
we sort of assume, but I'm glad to hear that.
Right.
Tell your mom. Yeah. It's been publicized.
Yes. Now I have said it on the, you know, Killer Women's. So everybody's going to know that it's not you. But yeah, it's just fascinating to me because it's a whole interesting thing. Like then when you become a mother and you have these kids and it's like, you really don't have control over this little person and how they're wired and what they're going to do. And you think they might be sort of similar to you, and maybe in some ways they are, but then in a lot of ways you're just not prepared for how that's going to go. And also you might have an idea how you'll be as a mother. And then when you're a mother, things can change. And you're like, oh my gosh. You just don't know. And so to me, it's just a really fascinating relationship because there's that bond, you know, this person gave birth to you, or you gave birth to these little people. And it's just a really complex sort of relationship that you can explore in so many different ways. And just often these,
And it's just not even, it's not even always like the mother, like in some ways, Grace was a mother figure for, you know, Amelia and Kylie in terms of encouraging them to, you know, to grow up and leave town, and also encouraging, like worrying about their safety and all those things. So it is, there's also that interesting idea of like, to be a mother or to mother someone, do we have to give birth to them? Mm-hmm. Or is it like, you know, I mean, is an adoptive mother the same as, you know, but it's true. You said, and like, you look at, you know, and I've forgotten Amelia and Kylie's mom's name.
Oh God, you think I would remember.
Right. Okay. Well, whatever. Is it? No. Anyway, I don't.
Why
does Elsie?
Why
no,
don't
I know?
I shouldn't
have brought it up. But
is it Shannon? Shannon.
Yeah, that's Shannon. Shannon. You're totally right. Elsie and Shannon. Thank you. Because I was like, well, and what if I put you on the spot and you couldn't remember? Which, to everybody listening, that does happen. Like, because she, like Laura's in the middle of a brand new book. Mm-hmm. She's got new mothers she's naming. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't remember what her name is. Which also goes to say it's definitely.
That happens to me all the time.
It's not your mother, because if it was your mother, you would 100% remember her name. But anyway, I mean, Shannon is, you know, she is such a different character. And I think we have, even those of us who kind of waited to have children and were married for a while, you think, oh, I'm ready. Like, I got this all lined up. I'm, you know, I'm a little bit more secure in my job and whatever. And then you have them and you're like, oh, I was fully not prepared. Like, I was fully not prepared. I was not prepared to not sleep. I was not right. prepared to like have this thing cry and not know how to. I mean, you can really see, I can absolutely see how, particularly single mothers, how they just lose it, like how they just cannot yeah. handle it. And at least I feel like in our country, and I don't know, I can't speak for other countries, I don't feel like there's a very good system in place for like, hey, you're having a rough time, mom, here's a group you could join. Right. Here's a place where you could safely drop your child for a few hours so you can go back to sleep. And, you know, oftentimes because of the, you know, economical situations, they're also working, yeah. right? There's no, you can't afford life on one salary. So you've got people who are not sleeping, working full time. I mean, God, operating heavy equipment. I don't know, but it's like, it's terrifying, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah. We're just expected to go on and do everything we need
to do. Yeah. Not to mention like how it changes your body, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
that's what's so like, you are literally, it's like going through a major car accident and then being in charge of a child. Like you're, you know, not physically maybe, but your body, like your hormones and your,
oh yeah,
and partially your body. Like it is so, and I feel like, you know, nobody even really gives it, or nobody, I didn't feel like when I was a new mom, was anybody like, okay, this is going to be really hard. They were just like, oh, what a cute baby. How are you doing? How's work? I'm like, you know, you're like, oh my God. It is so, so, so crazy.
Yeah.
So, and especially when there's less, you know, fewer resources, it's even harder. So it sounds like you're from a right. very big family.
I am. Yeah. I'm the youngest of 8 kids and I have at least like 100 first cousins. I have large family. Yep.
100 yeah. first cousins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dad had like 12 brothers and sisters and they all had like 14, 12, 10 kids. So yeah, we were one of the smaller families.
It's amazing.
Kids. Yeah.
That's a lot of children.
It is.
Yeah. And so right. Imagine your mom, like she's right. You're, by the time you come around, mm-hmm. she is.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Zoned out a little bit.
Well, so, I mean, she'd have to be. How would she would yeah, not survive
that's
the
how
day.
You survive. Yeah.
I think that's right. And that's why it's like interesting now, like back when we were little, parents would open their doors and be like, go outside and come back before dinner. And now, oh, you know, yeah. the world is so different. Like you have to know where your children are and, you know, there's a lot right. of, it's so the pressures are even greater, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, I'm trying to think like, I have so many little wonderful things I would love to unweave in this book, but I can't because you have to go and read this book. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on, or do you feel like it's, you jinx it when you're.
I can tell you a little bit.
Okay.
And this book needs to be done pretty soon. It's due in a couple of months. I'm not done yet, but I'm working on that. So okay. yes, book 6 is set again in an isolated rural place. It's right on the edge of the Mark Twain National Forest in southern Missouri, where it's like a million, literally like a million acres of uninhabited forest. And so I took some inspiration from a couple of true crimes from where I had lived. One of those was a boy in the grade beneath me in high school. When we were in school, he shot and killed all of his younger brothers and sisters one night. He was babysitting them and he murdered them all. And that was a really, you know, just for that to happen when you're in school and just thinking that through, it was a really crazy, crazy kind of thing. So the main character in this story, she is a survivor of a family massacre. And so she is having to go back to sell like their family house that's in the middle of nowhere. And a girl, a young woman, shows up on her doorstep barefoot in the middle of nowhere. And she's like, where did you come from? Should I let you in? You know, what's going on? And so I'll just say that much. And so it's kind of like, you're out in the middle of nowhere and someone shows up and what do you do? And she has kind of like this traumatic past, obviously,
yeah.
trying to work through that, that her sibling shot all the rest of her family and had murdered them. And she still doesn't really know exactly like why that right. happened, like what set that off. So.
Wow. Yeah. It's like just such a perfect pressure cooker situation. I absolutely love that. I kind of, you know, I'm sure people have said this to you before, but I can see these as movies, right? I mean, you're just in these, I mean, that's what we all want to do, right? We want our
oh, right.
TV movies, but like, the, mm-hmm. you know, and the town itself, but also like, the out where they go to the, you know, where they sort of go and party and the little cabin that is in Grace's ex-boyfriend's family, like all that stuff. It just adds these layers. Because of course, that's what, I mean, I live in Montana, and I know from my children's experience, what you do as a teenager in a relatively small town is you go to some isolated place, you light a bunch of stuff on fire and you drink, right?
Exactly. All good things, that's what you do.
All good things come from that, right?
Yes.
Which is different than what I did growing up, because I grew up in a city. So it's, but yeah, so you just see how, yeah, you see how this, and it is interesting also to note in reference to your good, to your new book, but also in reference to the books that you've written, how much pressure there is on each individual person in these environments, right? If, especially as you said, when you're poor, it's the amount of pressure that's on the parents, the children, you know, everybody. You can, I mean, what happened to with the kid who was below you in school is horrible. But you, these environments are so, you know, rife with the kind of situations that really just make people kind of break, right? You put everybody, and again, it sort of makes me think about the ways in which we don't do a good job of supporting people in our country. But anyway,
yes.
Not to get political, but you know, there's just a lot of, there's a lot of situations where we could probably do some, something better. So this is amazing. Laura, Safe and Sound. Look, also look closely at this. This is, I love that this is the woods. And then you see the black hand there. It's a beautiful cover. They did such a good job.
Yeah, I was happy with it.
Tell us where to find you online, where to follow you, all that good stuff.
Yes, my website is Laura McHugh Books. You can find me there. I am on Instagram, Laura McHugh Author. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on all the... TikTok, Laura McHugh.
Oh my God, I love that.
True crime, some true crime TikToks about a horrible crime in my town where I lived. Yeah. So,
oh,
if you want to know about some like cannibalism. Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Go check me out on TikTok.
I mean, if that is not a sales pitch for you on TikTok, cannibalism with Laura McHugh. I love that.
That's right.
Well, this is today is April 25th. And this book is out in the world. So go pick it up. And it sounds like we got to go back and start with The Weight of Blood. Because Laura, you do, I'm going to gush for just a minute, because what are, not only are, is the town this incredibly rich, creepy character, but each of these people, and there's a, it's a fairly good sized cast, right? We have the two, you know, Amelia and Kylie, their mother, their mother's boyfriend, they have, you know, there's an, there's Elsie and an uncle and Grace. And then there's some kids that were, that grew up with these girls, and they're all so beautifully drawn. They're all so sort of real and nuanced. There's nobody, you're not going to find a perfect unscathed human in a Laura McHugh book is my sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it's wonderful, because even the darkest humans in my mind, I feel like I understand them. You know what I mean? I feel like, and that I think is a sign of a really, really beautifully written book, is when you can sort of even empathize with the worst of the characters.
Oh,
so nicely done.
Thank you, you so much.
You do dark and creepy so well. So, and everybody, this is Safe and Sound with Laura McHugh, out now. Go check it out. Laura, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh my gosh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I look forward to the next one. Everyone, this is Killer Women with Danielle Girard and my guest today, Laura McHugh. There will be a copy of Safe and Sound to give away on our Killer Women Facebook page. So go check that out, and happy reading. Bye.